All right, welcome everybody to Hebrew Club on a beautiful February day. We are in Psalm 33, and we finished the first six verses of the psalm. So we're about ready to start verse 7. If you just back up one verse, notice how 7 kind of goes with that. But look at verse 6 again where it says, Bidvar Adonai, by the word of the Lord Shamaim, Na'asu, the heavens were made, U Beruach Piv, and by the breath of his mouth, all Zeva'am, all their host. So notice he's dwelling on creation right now. All right, so we're going to, I wanted to introduce that to see where the voice of the psalmist takes us from this point. So we start verse 7. Please feel free to just go sit on there. That's good. We got a place there for you. We got a place we're waiting for you. Right there. We just started too, by the way. So we're on 33, verse 7. Kones kaned me hayam notain be'otzarot tehomot. Notice he uses participles here. Kanas is a participle to gather. So notice it's referring, the subject of it is Yahweh. So he's the one who gathers. Kaned, as the heap, the waters of the sea, meha yam. Notain, another participle, the one who, and remember, natan can mean to give, but also can mean to put it in a place. It interchanges with seem a lot. So I would translate the one who puts in otsarot, in storehouses, tehomot, depths. We would probably say the deep, but notice that that's a plural noun. All right? So again, he seems to be now talking about, you know, the separation of waters into dry ground and the establishing of the waters in the proper boundaries where they should go. And of course, the firmament above, you know, with the earth below, those kinds of things. So he seems to be alluding to, or in the background of his thought, is the Genesis 1 account. Mm-hmm. All right. So now when he gets to verse 8, notice how he kind of changes from description to expressing his wishes or will. And again, notice how the verb fronts the whole verse. Yira'u me'adonai kol ha'aretz. So that's from Yara. Notice it's the first yud verb. And with this stative, as in yatav, that yud tends to stay in the imperfect. So it's a call imperfect. May they fear. And notice the subject is kol ha'aretz. May they be afraid of Yahweh. Maybe they fear Yahweh, probably. Again, Yareh with the min is common. But notice how you have a plural verb with a collective subject. All right, and again, I've mentioned this in Hebrew class, Jim, as well. It's interesting to see how those two correlate. Sometimes you have singular verbs with collective, sometimes plural, and it depends on which word you're talking about as far as what's more common, the singular plural verb and constituents around it, but also the book you're in, you know, and there can be variation within the book or even within the same passage. So just beware of that. So let all the earth fear, probably before Yahweh, but notice how the next sentence reiterates. Mimenu yaguru kol yoshve tevel. Of him, and now gur. Remember, you probably learned gur is to sojourn, but gur can also mean to attack, and it can also mean to be afraid of. You have that noun, magor, magor, fear, fear all around, another psalm. And so notice mimenu is the preposition from him, or of him, or at him. All the inhabitants of the earth will be afraid. Okay, so notice gur is now a synonym with yareh. All right, and yoshve is again a participle plural in the construct, call participle plural. So let all the earth fear Yahweh. Then of him, let all the inhabitants of the earth will be afraid. Okay. Any questions through 8? Yeah.
I just think it's interesting the fear. A lot of times, we don't talk about that too much, fearing God, really, right? Fearing God, because we're supposed to love him,
yeah.
You know. But here is synonymous with gur, you know, yeah, we're supposed to fear him. Fear in the real sense.
Yeah.
There's a side that we should fear him. It's not like there's respect, but yes, there's even more, a step beyond that.
And notice there's kind of a, I mean, it's interesting because the psalm starts, notice verse 2, hey, give a ring cry, O righteous. See, you have this joy. Praise Yahweh on the harp. Sing, notice verse 2 and 3, for the word of the Lord is upright, his works are with truthfulness. He's the one who loves righteousness and mishpat, notice that. And now when he gets to, notice how that tone shifts when he starts talking about creation. The praise is still echoing in our ears, but now it's also the, hey, you know, think about what this means as far as Yahweh and his power. And so, yeah, the sense of awe and majesty and fear that you have when you contemplate this God who has the power over the created world as he does. Yeah. So notice verse 9. I love this line, actually. Because notice in verse 6 and 7, he's been talking about creation. So that's still in the back of our minds when we get to verse 8. And now notice verse 9. Where do our minds go? Ki hu amar vayahi, hu tziva vayamod. So notice you have all these perfect tenses. So I would translate it like this. For he spoke and yahi, and it happened. From Haya, right? He tziva, he commanded, vayamod, and it stood. So what do you think he's talking about in verse 9?
Let there be light.
Oh, see, notice it seems that he's talking back to creation, right? So he spoke and it happened, right? That connection between God said, let there be light, and there was light. God said, let the firmament bring forth light. There was light. Let the ground bring forth animals. And so it happened, right? You have that. So notice he uses those perfect tenses really nice. And it's very interesting because the translations all translate that with past tense referring to creation, and I would agree. Now you get to the next line. I want you to notice that the verb forms are perfect forms. All right? I'm going to translate them as present tenses. Most translations do, and you're going to probably see why immediately. Yahweh, hefir the atzat goyim. Yahweh breaks. That hefir is actually a geminate verb from parar, to break. So it's a hifil perfect. Yahweh breaks the atzat goyim, the council from Eitzah, the council of the goyim, of the nations. Heinia, this is from Nua, and it is a hifil, again, perfect. Notice here's a hollow verb, and it means to hinder. He hinders the machshavot, the plans of people, of the peoples. All right? So what I like about this is that he moves from creation to his involvement in human history. He controls, you know, nations and kings propose and God disposes. I mean, you see this move a lot in the Psalms too, where it talks about creation, his rule over creation, now his rule over human history. So notice we shift to the present tense under the assumption that, okay, he's talking about history now, and this is an ongoing activity of Yahweh, right? Not just, you know, I'm making the assumption in that translation he's not talking just about past history, which we have recorded in the Old Testament, like Assyria and Egypt and Israel.
Yeah,
and
he's not a deistic God.
Yeah. That's right. That he doesn't just, he's not a watchmaker, just stands back, but he's involved, see? So that's why I'm translating present tense. So, so if you read verse 9 from that perspective, notice, the first way I read it was to read verse 9 as kind of the end of the main thought of creation, and then verse 10, the beginning of the second. But you could also now, since he deals with perfect tenses here, kind of think about it as the beginning of his talk about the history. So when he says something, it happens. When he commands something, it stands. See, so notice there's, I love the ambivalence that brings to the line. So it can be referred to both creation, but also God's ongoing work in history, whether you see it as the end of the section dealing with creation or the beginning of the section dealing with Yahweh's dealings with his people. See? So I just want to point that out. So most translations, though, see verse 9 as referring to creation, verse 10 kind of starting something different. But the verb tenses don't demand that reading. All right? So you see the ambiguity, and of course, being Hebrew poetry, I kind of love to think about that. So just as he ruled creation, he still rules over human history. Just as his word stands, you know, he's created light and animals and everything. So when he speaks in human history, that's what's going to happen. So that's kind of my idea, all right?
You're saying verse 9 could introduce a comparative clause?
Well, just that the way that you see the flow of the psalm go, you're reading verse 9 as the end of his talk about creation. Verse 10 is now he's dealing with human history. But then when you see that the verb tenses are the same between verse 9 and 10, it makes verse 9 a little ambiguous. And so you can also read it as the beginning of human history. And then maybe think in the background, oh, those could also be present tenses too. He speaks and it happens. He commands and it stands. See, so it goes both ways is what I'm suggesting. So the psalmist is looking back, looking forward. So he connects Yahweh's rule over creation with human history. I mean, you see this, the same flow in Psalm 46, right? You see him talk about the undoing of creation, the first part of the psalm, and then he uses the same language in talking about the nations outside of the city to talk about Yahweh's control over human history and the nations. See, so it kind of brings those two together in a nice way. And I'm just suggesting, I'm not pushing the point or making the hard point, that makes an interesting reading of the psalm, okay? That movement from creation to history. And then that line, not only did he speak in the past, but when he speaks today, it happens, okay? Any other questions? All right. Verse 11, then, again, you have Atzat Adonai Le'olam Tatmot. The counsel of the Lord forever. You can translate this simple call, imperfect, from Ahmad. The counsel of the Lord stands forever, or you can make him more say, making it more forceful, will stand forever. See, again, referring to kind of anything he says, right? The Mach Shavot, the plans of his heart, Lador Vador, for generation upon generation.
What an opposition between 10 and 11, because it's Mach Shavot. First are men's.
Yeah. Good. See, isn't that nice? Yeah. I mean, isn't that great?
The first could be shake and the second...
Yep. So he hinders the counsels of people, but the counsels of his heart, I love that. So, it speaks of God. He has his own his own mind, the Mach Shavot of his, are for generation, generation. Theirs, he hinders and he breaks. Yeah, so you see that connection and then contrast. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, that's a good point. Good, and see, you see the Eitzet too, the Council of the Nations. It's just an exact kind of mirror image. Yeah. Any questions between 10 and 11? It's really good. All right, now he begins verse 12. Ashrei ha-goy asher Adonai Elohav ha-am bachar le-nachalalo. Okay, notice that ashrei, that's one of those frozen forms. I mean, as it is, it only appears as a construct or with as a plural with suffixes. And it's usually translated as this exclamatory particle. So you would translate it, how blessed Hagoy, the nation. How blessed the goy is the nation. And this word is used in the horizontal relationships, man to man. All right. Baruch is has a wider use, but that's also where man to God or God to man. All right. So this one's man to man. So how fortunate the goy, or how blessed the goy, who Yahweh is Elohav, his God. And now notice, I love this, because that see that accent above ha'am, the shal shalat, that's my favorite accent. Looks like a little lightning bolt. Ha'am, the people, so it kind of emphasizes it. So he moves from goy to ha'am, and ha'am is more customarily used to refer to his covenant people, those with whom he has a relationship with. So the Masoretes kind of point that out with the lightning bolt. Ha'am, the people. Now notice, as in Hebrew poetry, you have the asher, not present. The people he chooses, le, nachala lo, as an inheritance for himself. Nachala is simply the noun for inheritance. So how blessed the nation who Yahweh is his God. And notice the asher is there, but not in the second colon. The people whom he has chosen as an inheritance for himself. All right? Very nice. Any questions on 12? All right, verse 13. Mishamayim hibit Adonai ra'a et kol b'nei ha'adam. From the heavens, Yahweh looks down. Again, notice it's perfect tenses, but we're assuming this is kind of describing what is indeed the situation. All right? This is from a Hifil perfect from Navat. And Jim, again, you had this in beginning Hebrew. It only occurs in the Hifil, this word. And so from the heavens, Yahweh gazes out, or gazes, or looks. Ra'ah, he sees et kol all b'nei ha'adam. Again, that's an idiom for all humanity. B'nei is one of those words like ish that is used in combination with other words to form kind of idiomatic terms for groups or certain kinds of people, classes of people. So here we'd say b'nei ha'adam for all humanity.
It could be connected with the theme of creation again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Was that probably sons of Ben and King James? Is that what they would have done?
They may have, yeah. What's interesting, again, look at how Yahweh is being pictured, because in this whole psalm, you get this a more transcendent view of God. See? But not an uninvolved God. So you see points. I mean, you know, notice this powerful God creates, but you see him more intimately connected with the fortunes of the nation. So we're still on a national level as you're thinking about this psalm. See, and now you get this, okay, he gazes from the heavens. So notice you get this more transcendent view. Yahweh's there seeing everything. So notice the picture that the psalmist, the perspective that he's giving you of Yahweh, that what he wants you to see of Yahweh, all right? So from the heavens, Yahweh gave, and notice now it's kind of his omniscience that we're going to. See, it's not only his omnipotence, which was forefronted, but now his omniscience. He sees everything. He sees all humanity, all right? And now, again, that's stressed, you know, that kind of separateness and aboveness, the transcendence of Yahweh in relation to his creatures in verse 14. Mekon shivto hishgiach. This is from makon, which is from the root kun, to establish, to be established. So from, and so makon would be a fixed place. So again, here you see that root kun, you add a mem and it becomes a noun. And it's in construct with shivto, which is, Jim, your famous first yud, what? Infinitive construct from yashav. So it forms those segalet. Remember, first yud verbs form their infinitive constructs as segalets. So yashav becomes shevet, lakach becomes kachat, and so on. So from the fixed place of his dwelling, hishgiach, he gazes down. Here's another word for see. Shagach, he looks down. It's a hifil form, hifil perfect. Everybody see that? Nice classic hifil perfect. He looks down. El kol, at all the yoshvei ha'aretz. There's the phrase again. Synonym with b'nei ha'adam. At all the inhabitants of the earth. Okay? So again, from the fixed place of his dwelling, he looks down at all the inhabitants of the earth. Okay? Now, notice where he goes. I mean, he's still kind of, the implications of it are now underlined in verse 15. Hayotzer, again, notice the participle, but now it has a definite article. Hayotzer yachad libam. The one who forms, call participle, the one who forms yachad altogether, libam, their heart. See, now you see his omniscience, not just looking down at them, but you get this, oh man, he also form their heart or their mind. Also the inner life of human beings, Yahweh penetrates, has control of. See? So from the biggest heavens to their heart of all people. Ha may bean. Notice that that is from bean and it is a hifil participle used as a substantive, which is why you have the hey there again. The one who understands or has insight into all ma'asehem, all their workings. Okay? Very interesting. Questions through 15. All right, 16. Ein ha-melech noshab barav chayil. Okay, notice as soon as you see the ein, you know, non-finite verb, right? Because those things negate non-finite clauses. And so when you get to nosha, very good, Jim, you know this one. This is from the root yasha, and it is a nifal. And notice that big fat comets under the shin tells you it is not a perfect form, it is a participle. So notice you get ein that's telling you that's a non-finite verb. And remember the passive conjugations, nifal, pual, hafal, form their participles with comets, and that comets stays throughout the singular and plural, and that helps you distinguish between the perfect and imperfect. So not is the king saved. The king is not saved. So Yasha means to save, and the Hifil Nifal means to be saved. So not saved is the king, Berav Chayil, by the greatness of an army, Chayil. And the Berav, that's from the root Ravav, to be great. This is a noun from Rov, has a long holem. In construct, it becomes Rav, Berav Chayil. So not is the king saved by... It's usually translated the strength of his army or by the greatness or by the, yeah, whether that could be number, but also power of his army.
And the greatness of his strength?
Yeah, or his strength, Chayil. Right. A gibur, a hero. Gibur, gavar, means to be strong or mighty, gavar. And we had the word gevurah today, Jim, the abstract term, gevurah, powerful deed, mighty deed. So gibur is from the same root. A hero, not... Yinatzel, is delivered. Nifal from Natzal, that's more common in the Hifil, hate zeal to deliver. But notice these Nifal forms are being used in a certain way here. A hero is not delivered. So notice it uses lo because it's using a finite verb here. Whereas in the first colon, it used a participle, nosha, with ain. Okay, so notice that's according to kind of how Hebrew customarily works. A hero... is not delivered by the Rav, by the greatness or bigness of Koach, power. Okay? Now notice too that you have two notes on, if you look at 16a and 16c, both of them, and there's some manuscript evidence for both of them, have the third masculine singular suffix. So a lot of translations do that because in English you're almost begging for a man's not saved by the greatness of his power, or by the strength of his army. See that? But they're absent in the text, the Masoretic text as we have them. But they do appear later, probably the next verse already. Okay. Any question through 16? Alright, verse 17. Sheker hasus l'teshua. Sheker is a lie. So the horse is a lie for teshua, for salvation. This is again from Yasha. Instead of adding a mem, this time they add a tav to make the noun, teshua. Very common. So a lie is the horse for salvation. Uberov, there's the absolute form. And in the by the greatness, or there's just a long spelling of it. By the greatness of chelo, his might, not yemale, not can he save. Notice that's a piel from malat, piel, imperfect. Third masculine. And I think it's probably referring to the horse.
The horse is present in the form of Psalm. The end of Psalm. It's a coincidence, I think, but why are these sounds together?
Which one? Oh, this one and which one?
The form.
Two.
Don't be like the...
The horse or the... Yeah, you never know. Yeah, see, there are those word links that seem to have more to do with why psalms are put together than you think. And Kyle Dalich is one commentary that pays good attention to that. So, you know, he'll kind of point those things out where he can. And also there is this... I think it's Chacham. It's a Jewish author who pays attention to that. And a lot of people are seeing the connections between the psalms on a more thematic or kind of basis like that. But a lot of times it just seems to be as simple as word connections, to me, at least.
I was reading chapter 4 and 5 yesterday, and chapter 4 has to do with praying at night, and chapter 5 praying in the morning.
Right, and then you see those connections there. Yeah, so there seem to be kind of, on the face of it, obvious kind of connections between groups, you know. Okay? Go ahead.
On 17, the horse, the Seuss, has the definite article.
Yeah.
Is that to help us distinguish that as the subject and the sheker is the...
No, it's just sometimes that it's like English usage that it refers to a class. So the horse is not... So in this case, the definite article does not function as some specific horse, but as this class of animal, the horse. And so it's customary to have an article in Hebrew too. So we would say the same thing. The horse is an animal that we rely on for whatever. Speaking about a class. So Hebrew's doing the same thing here. Yeah. Okay, we'll do one more verse here. Hine ein Adonai el Yereav, la meyachalim lechasdo. So look, the eye of the Lord is on Yereav. Look at that form, because that's from Yare. Remember, this is a stative verb, to be afraid, and the participles of stative verbs, rather than being formed with a holon like kotel, have the form kamatz tsere, Yare. And the so it'd be Yare, and then the feminine singer is Yereah, and now you have Yereim is the plural participle, Yereim, those who fear. And now you have the suffix for plural nouns attached to the participle, which functions as a substantive here. So behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, Yereav. Okay? La, now notice it changes from el to la, lamed, for the preposition, no big deal. Meyachalim from yachal means to hope. This is a pl participle, masculine plural. Meyachalim. The chet absorbs that dagish. So the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope, from yachal, for chasdo, for his chesed. Okay? So very good. We'll stop here. Any questions through 18? Very interesting song. Yeah? All right. Very good. Thank you guys very much. See ya.